Hey everyone, here at the Book Pile, we provide only the most entertaining content, like today's book on grammar. It's Elements of Style by William Strunk and E.B. White. Next week, we'll do some math.
I'm Kellen Erskine. I'm a comic, and this has been my favorite book on writing ever since I was a teenager in Barnes & Noble and found the skinniest book on grammar.
And I'm David Vance. I loved E.B. White's books, Charlotte's Web and Stuart Little, so I was captivated by this book's protagonist, nouns.
The Elements of Style is a short, bold, and quietly funny guide to English grammar. It sits on the bookshelves of Stephen King, Roger Ebert, and Ben Affleck.
And this is The Book Pile.
So here's a piece of fan mail that I don't think the author will mind my reading. It is from the person who left a review that week, whose name in the review was Corrijo, or at least I read it that way, thinking it came from the Spanish verb to correct. She says, "Hey, thanks for mentioning my review. I'm a girl named Corinne."
So she did write in to correct our Spanish.
She says, "My nickname growing up was Cory Joe." It's great because she concludes with, "I don't speak Spanish, but I feel I have to correct you as that is my name now." So thanks, Corinne. That was a lot of fun. I want to plug a website for a foundation that she works for. This isn't a joke. It's a website called knowyourlemons.com, and they provide creative ways to help detect breast cancer early.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So go to knowyourlemons.com. And then here's another piece of fan mail from Jen Fisher. She says, "Love the podcast. I would love to hear your review on the Road by Jack Kerouac. I usually love classics, and I've never hated a book and a protagonist as much as I hated On the Road by Jack Kerouac." So this is, thanks for that.
After reading On the Road, if I were Jack Kerouac's friend, my biggest message for him would be, "You're not cool, you're just stoned." Everything he says, he's like, "Isn't this the most magnificent thing you've ever heard?" And it's like, "No, man, you're just high."
I love this, and I want to put an invitation out there for anyone else. Like, I think it's okay to recognize that even the best storytellers can churn out garbage once in a while, for the same reason that you don't always have the best day at work either. So Our email is thebookpilepodcast@gmail.com. And this week, let us know what classic you hate and why. We'll read a few of your responses next week, and we'll let you know what ours are.
All right, without further ado, here are our four favorite lessons from Elements of Style. Okay, lesson one, use periodic sentences. So sentences like, "Hey, you got some argon?"
Oh, man. You were so eager to tell that joke.
That joke makes me want to bully myself. No, so periodic sentence means, you know, the important thing goes at the end. So it's most obvious with jokes. So look what happens when the punchline isn't at the end of this joke. So this is an onion joke, first the right way. Skin, body's largest organ, unless the guy has a really humongous heart or giant lung or something. All right, now here's the wrong way. Skin, unless the guy has a really humongous heart or giant lung, this is the body's largest organ. So this is a pretty clear example where you take the most important thing, you don't make it the last part of the sentence, and the power is totally diminished. But look at it in just some famous quotes that aren't jokes. Look at what happens when the important thing isn't at the end. "Other than fear itself, we have nothing to fear." "No, your father is me, Luke." "You know who will inherit the earth is the meek." "A car is what you're getting. A car is what you're getting."
There's an example in the book, not of this, but E.B. White brings it up. First he says, "These are the times that try men's souls." And then he flips it around and goes, "What if he had written, 'Soul-wise, these are trying times'?" Yeah, so this is something that I encounter constantly in comedy. When writing a joke, it's always to end it at the peak of the joke. And if it's a joke that has several punchlines, Like I have a bowling joke that I'm working on right now that it's several jokes in a row. And after trying it out several times, I've found that what I thought was that was going to be the funniest part has now it's ended up in the middle. Like what I thought was the funniest joke was bowling belongs in the Olympics over curling, because whatever your sport is, after you slide it, you shouldn't get to like have your friends spend the rest of the time correcting your mistake. But then the line that gets the even bigger laugh is I say that bowling is the harmonica of sports. Because have you ever like...
I want to pause. It's funny even before you explain it.
Good. Because like, have you ever never played the harmonica in your life and then you pick one up and blow into it and everyone around you is like, oh, do you play the harmonica?
I don't know how bowling like ingratiated itself in the first date community. Like, what was the pitch where they were like, hey, do you want to never be able to talk because you're constantly switching places? Have your date see you do something that you're probably terrible at, because most people are terrible at it, all while you're wearing like fungi infested shoes? Bowling.
I love it too, the guy that like gets a strike and then plays it totally cool. That's got to be so impressive to his date.
It's the like bowl, turn away, and the strike happens while you're not looking.
Yeah.
It's equally as cool looking as a no look three.
Like, as if the woman sitting there is like, okay, I thought the 11 Bud Lights was a red flag, but did he just score a turkey?
Okay, lesson two, omit needless words. Or as writers say, kill your Tom Bombadils. I love that Tolkien, in the middle of Fellowship, was like, you know what this book needs is the most pointless garbage imaginable. Well,
it's so funny because there is such a quick reason for him that it's ridiculous, because they spend the night at his house, and then in the morning he says, hey, if you ever need help, just sing this little song, oh, Tom Bombadil. And then three pages later, they're like, quick, call Tom Bombadil. Like, it would have at least made sense, like, 500 pages later, where you basically forgot about the guy. And you're like, oh, yeah. But it was literally like they walked down the street and got robbed.
And then never again. He just owed them one favor and no more. All right, this is a short one. So omit needless words basically means every word should tell. Every word should do something important. So Stephen King says, you know, go back, cut out the slowest 10% of your script, and it's like literary Viagra, which you kind of wish Herman Melville had done with. Never mind. But what's interesting is that this principle isn't applicable just to writing. It's applicable to every part of your life. So the book Essentialism is all about, you know, cut out every needless meeting, every needless project, everything that's not essential to your life.
The way to do it, needless words, you can be aware of it on the first draft and definitely on the second draft of whatever you're writing. It's the difference between that first voice message that you leave and the unbelievably shorter version when you have that option to re-record it a second time.
So my brother's been married for several years now, but the very first time he called his now wife to ask her out, I was in the room and he starts leaving a message and he's like, hey, I've been trying to go on more dates. So, and I like spun around so fast, totally horrified that he was like, oh, I'm realizing I should re-record this message. So then he re-recorded, hey, it's me, call me back. And so I take at least some credit for them now being married. The secret to dating is you want to quickly convey to your crush that they are just a number. And you haven't been dating very much.
All right. Lesson three, hyphens are easy to use punctuation marks. So when two or more words are combined to form a compound adjective, a hyphen is usually required. So to explain that, by the way, I love...
hyphens, the ionic bonds of letters.
Well, it just simply means when you're describing something and there are two words before it that are also connected, you put them together with a little dash thing. I know it's not a dash for any grammarians out there. Dashes are technically two hyphen buttons together, but listen.
Now, I'm just curious, in those things that have like word limits, if you include hyphens, does it all count as one word? Like, you know those board games where you're only allowed to give one word hints? Uh-huh. I wonder if just hyphenating the whole phrase would count.
Yeah, if it's Lincoln and you're like, all of these are hyphenated, beard and hat president guy. I think all those parallels are silly that people find. You can find parallels with anything. But the craziest one to me between John F. Kennedy and Lincoln is that they're both funny. No, that Lincoln was shot in Ford's Theater and Kennedy was shot in a Lincoln, which is made by Ford. It's almost like the Illuminati. They're like, well, we can't not assassinate this guy now with these parallels in front of us.
They actually really liked his policies, but rules are rules.
But what they love even more is leaving little clues around. If I've learned anything from Dan Brown. So I love this book. It's a joy to read because of the humor that William Strunk injects into so many of his examples. So for this hyphen one, he says, she belonged to the leisure class and enjoyed leisure class pursuits. So the hyphen being between leisure and class. And I love the sequel to this example is, she entered her boat in the round the island race, which is, again, round the island is hyphenated twice.
These example sentences are raising so many more questions for me.
I do love that it's like,
who is this leisure class boat racing woman? I'm so intrigued.
The leisure class sounds like people who are clearly in the 1%. Trying to answer a question to their children when they're like, are we middle class? As if it's just this sort of lateral move. Like, not quite. We're more leisure class.
He rose from a humble leisure class background.
You know the class that by definition means you don't have to work anymore? And so something that's fun for me, and I like to think even if you're not a writing nerd, that it can be applicable to you. I practice grammar by putting it into you. So even when I'm texting, I'll throw these things in. And I think that it probably sometimes comes across as like I'm trying to sound smarter than I am. But it really is me like practicing. I'll throw in hyphens into text. I'll throw in quotes. I wish you could use italics.
You know, if Strunk and White ever saw an emoji, they would slit someone's throat.
Right. And it probably seems like I'm taking like a counter stance to emoji culture, or that I'm like anti-shortening words like okay down to the letter K. I which I am a little like, I get that made sense in the early short-lived years of texting when you had to hit the same number three times just to pound out an O. But like, we haven't had that problem for years, so I don't see how much time it really saves people. Also, I don't know if you noticed, but when I said short-lived, I said it with a hyphen. So a fun anecdote from the book, he tells a story of how the two newspapers merged together, the Free Press and the Chattanooga News. So it became the Chattanooga News Free Press. Chattanooga. I literally thought that it was a word that was made up just for that song. So I literally didn't – I did not know that Chattanooga was a real place until I got an offer to work there. And it's actually a fun
– it's like someone asking you to headline Narnia.
Oh, that would be terrible. You go – like I don't care how much a gig pays. If I come back and everyone's 90 years older, I don't want to interstellar my life.
Wait, isn't it the opposite where no one – back home ages, but you stay in Narnia for a long time?
Oh, probably. Either way, I think the Interstellar joke still works, so I'm going to leave all that.
I just Corey Joe'd you.
So Chattanooga is actually a really fun little town. The first day that I was there, I found this pinball, what they call it, it's pinball museum, where you just pay like 10 bucks and you can play on these old pinball machines. And wow. So I ended up getting the high score on this pinball machine, which I've never got the high score on any game in my life. So this is like a childhood dream. Like I got to put, wow. I got to put in my initials, which the first one is off because I didn't know which button was enter. But who cares?
That's like, so sad.
I know that it's me. So I was on cloud nine all day. I go to the club that night and tell the story about how I got the high score on this pinball game, first time in my life. And this guy, a few people clap, and then one guy goes, "That place opened yesterday." 150 people just got to see wind coming out of sails in real time.
You think the wind came out of your sails? Imagine the owner who thought a pinball museum is a good idea.
All right. Lesson four, put statements in positive form. This is rule number 15 from the book. So this means when possible, don't say what something isn't. Say what it is. And this is something that I try to be aware of now just in everyday speech. So instead of saying, "I wasn't sure," say, "I was unsure." Or "I did not remember" becomes "I forgot." And "he doesn't eat meat" becomes "Dave thinks he's better than you."
No, I think that's valuable. Jay Heinrichs talks about how sometimes when you use denial words, the audience only remembers what you're trying to deny. So like Nixon says, "I am not a crook." And the word everyone remembers is crook. It's like,
I never thought you, it would apply that way.
It's almost the don't think of a white elephant thing. You know, like you walk up to someone and say, "Hey, I'm not a cannibal." They're going to have questions.
Wait, a white elephant? I've only heard "don't think of elephants." Why did you bring race into this?
Oh my gosh. Have you heard the etymology of white elephant?
No.
Of like the, you know, Christmas white elephants? So apparently in Southeast Asia, white elephants were considered sacred in certain parts. And so if you gave your enemy a white elephant, they weren't able to use it for work, but it was so expensive to feed. So you could essentially bankrupt them with this terrible gift.
That's, I guess it's taken a turn for the better.
I do like how the term white elephant has improved considerably, because now instead of like, "Hey, I'm going to financially ruin you," it's just like, "Hey, here's some old body chocolate." All right, random facts. I learned that the word clever, if you say it about a horse, means good-natured, not smart, in case you want to be passive-aggressive to a horse.
Which I feel like horses are the most passive aggressive of all animals. You ever just walk by a horse that you don't even know and it goes like So Strunk despised the phrase "student body" because it sounded cadaverous. So he went to the Alumni News, which was the Cornell newspaper, and asked them to replace the phrase with the word "studentry." Which they did.
That was better.
Which they did, and it's a word he made up.
I do feel like, in the same way that Marie Kondo loves some clothes like they're actual people, he hates some words like they slept with his wife.
Yeah.
He says, at one point he says, "prestigious, an adjective of last resort. It's in the dictionary, but that doesn't mean you have to use it." Yeah. He also says, "never call a stomach a tummy without good reason."
What's the good reason that you're two? I mentioned Ben Affleck before. Ben Affleck says about this book, he says, "the elements of style has been of great use to me and is probably responsible for my best writing," end quote.
Wow. But
I would guess that Matt Damon is responsible for his best writing.
What's funny? When you say Ben Affleck, I keep thinking you're saying it wrong. And the reason is that my brother Johnny has all these dumb pronunciations of movie star names. So he always says Ben Affleck. He says Matt Damien. He says George Clooney and Brad Pitt. And so I'll just be like, that Matt Damien is so talented. So other words and phrases he doesn't like being used. He says, an item important enough to call for, etc., is probably important enough to be named.
I love it when people use etc. as just like the laziest sort of escape from trying to make a sentence.
I use etc. to mean I can't think of any more examples, but I'm pretending I could if I wanted to.
I've definitely said stuff like, yeah, I love all the guys in Aerosmith, you know, Steven Tyler, etc.
I have straight up been in political debates where I'll make an argument for something and then I'll list every reason I know of for that thing and then say etc. as though I have more.
A few more of those examples. I love, again, how it's so compelling to read a book written by someone who is so absolutist. And that's why this to me is another reason why it sets it apart from other books. Like other rule books will just say like, here's when you use which, here's when you use that. But then
he says, if you use that wrong, I will kill you. Yeah.
So here's a few of these. He goes, for the word insightful, if it is to be used at all, it should be used for instances of remarkably penetrating vision. So then he tells you to change it from that was an insightful remark to that was a perceptive remark.
Why after every one of these sentences do I feel like he just slapped my hand with a ruler?
So for the word finalize, he just says it's a pompous, ambiguous verb. for the word type, he says it's not a synonym for kind of. The examples below are common vulgarisms. And he gives examples of instead of saying like that type of employee should be that kind of employee. And then finally, adding Y's at the end of words, Strunk says, he gives the examples tax-wise, price-wise, marriage-wise, saltwater taffy-wise. You can tell he's like angry while he's writing this. He says, there's not a noun in the language to which wise cannot be added, but the sober writer will abstain from the use of this wild additive.
If I was this guy's neighbor and I just hated him, then every morning for 40 years, I'd be like, hey, Strunk.
You're pretty nice, neighbor-wise.
All right, this quote is kind of long, but I love it. He says, the mind travels faster than the pen. Consequently, writing becomes a question of learning to make occasional wing shots, bringing down the bird of thought as it flashes by. A writer is a gunner, sometimes waiting in the blind for something to come in, sometimes roaming the countryside hoping to scare something up.
I love that. I do love the stuff that E.B. White added in there as far as like style and creativity. In the foreword to the 50th anniversary edition, E.B. White's stepson writes about White's work habits, which to me encapsulates perfectly the creative process. He says of E.B. White, the sounds of his typewriter from his room came in hesitant bursts with long silences in between. Huh. And for anyone who thinks that they have, you know, writer's block, just know that that is like most of the process is just sitting there. Elements of Style is a Time Magazine top 100 best nonfiction books of all time, joining the ranks of In Cold Blood and Silent Spring. But it's the only book about grammar. So here are some final just quick grammar facts that I actually think are helpful. All right is two words.
What?
All right. It's always two words. It's never one word. It's not a word.
Why?
Why not?
Why does spell check not correct it?
It's important too to understand that every language with all the rules that it has, like words themselves are sort of always in this evolutionary state. How like...
So it doesn't exist? I'm a language creationist.
But if you're writing a book, even if it's used in dialogue, your editor is for sure going to separate your all right into two words, all right.
Really?
Yeah. The verb cope is always followed with. So one does not just cope, but you cope with the situation.
Interesting. So you can't say he can't cope.
Yeah, that's an incomplete sentence.
Literally all of these feel wrong to me.
Well, and this is why they're helpful for me. One that isn't in the book that's helped me is the difference between less and fewer. So fewer is used with like hard numbers and less is used with like abstract things. Like he loved me less. You wouldn't say he loved me fewer. And instead of saying...
So it's like I have less money but fewer dollars.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke, but that's... You're right.
Oh, go ahead.
You're right about your example. Farther, the difference between farther and further is that farther is a distance word and further generally serves best as a time or quantity word. So for example, you'd say, I need to chase that rabid bear farther, and then tomorrow I will further pursue better job opportunities. And then my last one here is, I just love how he puts so much information into every sentence. He's a great example of a guy who walks the walk. And speaking of like omitting needless words and making sure that every word tells, because try and follow all of this. He says, when describing a dash, the punctuation mark, quote, a dash is a mark of separation stronger than a comma, less formal than a colon, and more relaxed than parentheses.
Are all of his friends punctuation?
By the way, though, when it comes to punctuation, why colon? Why why is that ever?
It took me years after writing the Squatty Potty ad to realize that their logo was, you know, the smiling emoji, which is literally a happy colon.
Is that on purpose?
I think so.
Oh, wow. I didn't put those two together. There's so much wrong with what's happening. When all those Englishmen were having their meeting on what punctuation should be called, they're like, all right, parentheses, ellipses, small intestine. No, that's disgusting and way too wordy.
Going off of your comment about how language is always evolving, I did really like this quote from the book. The language is perpetually in flux. It is a living stream, shifting, changing, receiving new strength from 1,000 tributaries, losing old forms in the backwaters of time. And that's why I think all right is one word and it's okay to end with cope.
That's very perceptive of you.
All right, to recap, our favorite lessons from Elements of Style. 1, use periodic sentences. 2, omit needless words. 3, hyphens are easy to use punctuation marks. 4, put statements in positive form.
And 5, if you want to write and sell 10 million copies of a book, just find an old book that a dead professor of yours wrote and add a chapter to it. Which is exactly what happened.
Great Expectations, now with an intro by David Vance.
Those sound so much smarter than mine, because mine would be like the 30th edition of The Pelican Brief by John Grisham and Kellen Erskine. Strunk would love that the word brief is in the title of a book.
Omit needless authors.
Isn't that what they called every book burning?